Welcome to All Been Inside, a podcast series produced by Voices for Change. Voices for Change is a self-advocate group from Melbourne, Australia.
Using our lived experience, expertise, we help organisations work for making life better for people with an ABI.
We also educate the community about ABI and try to address the stigmas we carry about our lived experience.
Just a heads up, from now on, you may hear us talk about acquired brain injury as an ABI, so don't forget it, okay?
We talk about issues like intimate partner violence, alcohol and other drugs, and the way the justice system could improve things for people with an acquired brain injury.
We want you to take care when you listen to our stories and reach out for help if you need it. We will let you know where you can get it.
We have created this series to be uplifting. We want to show that it is possible to overcome the challenges in your life.
We want it to be thought-provoking, which means we want it to catch you and motivate our policy makers to create changes we need.
We hope you enjoy our series and that you learn something about our community.
For more information about our work, follow the link to our website and our social pages.
My name's I have had an extraordinary life, and the places that I work for now and all the people that I can help that have been through that are going through what I've been through is helping me recover, as well as helping them not go through what we went through. So I really enjoy that. But I also enjoy horse riding. I swim. I go motorbike riding. I do a lot of. I go to the gym. I do a lot of walking. I eat well. You know. I just also like to say before you listen to my story, this could be triggering for women, but it could be triggering for men that go through domestic violence as well. So just be aware of before you listen to my story. But the story is real, and now I'm going to tell you my story. I was brought up on the street. I was made a ward of the state, a state child when I was young. I had to do jail because there was nowhere else to place me. My home life wasn't good, so I had no choice than to leave. So that put me in a situation where I didn't have any family. I only had my street friends that have mainly passed away now because of the system, how the system is. They couldn't cope, so they're not here no more. And then growing up, being in that situation, I met a horrible person that abused me for 14 years. He broke my neck. He broke my ribs. He broke my arm. He destroyed my back. He did a lot of things to me, so I had to leave. And then, unfortunately, where I left was to a person I didn't know, but I had no other choice because I had nowhere else to go. And I knew him for about 2 weeks, and then he told me that he'd just murdered a woman, and I didn't know if it was hearsay or real, so I just took it in my stride because I've heard everything. People say things and you just don't know if it's real or not. But that night he nearly killed me, he nearly bashed me to death, and I had to be sneaky to get away from him because I thought he was going to kill me so it wasn't discovered. So I tricked him to get out of the house, and I ran from the house, went straight to a police station, got put straight into the hospital. And because of having no next of kin, or nobody watching what was going on with my welfare. Well, I was kept in the hospital only for overnight. Not even overnight. I think I was only there for about 6 hours. And then the police withdrew me, took me down to a dark room in the hospital. They forced me to shower. They forced my DNA out of me. And at that stage, my head was... He'd bashed me so bad, I was unrecognisable. My head was so bad, I just needed to lay down and I wasn't allowed to. And then after they'd showered me, they walked me across the road to the 7-Eleven across the road from... Put me in a police car, took me to Fawkner Police Station. I was sat down there for about 7 hours. I was stuck in Fawkner Police Station and all I wanted to do was lay down. You know, I was in horrific state. And then I was put into a church and hidden. So nobody could see what had happened. And then all these fits started happening, like because of the hard hits, I ended up with a brain tumour. So the fits started happening and then the head spins, the painful head spins. I was in shock. I couldn't go anywhere. I was unrecognisable. People seen me and they just... like freak out. So I was stuck in this church for quite a while and then I had nowhere else to go. So the church ended up kicking, like you could only stay there for so long. They didn't kick me out, but you could only stay there for so long and I had nowhere else to go. So I had to go back to my perpetrator that used to abuse me for 14 years because I had nowhere else and I was in shock and I wasn't able to be walking around in public. So then I was stuck with him for quite a long time because the shock and the head spins, the fits that I was having, just all the injuries took a long time. It took about 2 years to recover from that, but it took years and years to recover on my own and pay for my own private scans and everything to get everything because I didn't know what was going on. I was so unwell and been released from a hospital straight away and all these things were happening to me and it was scary. I couldn't control them. I would fall into walls. I'd fall into the bath if I was in the bathroom. It was just horrifying. And, so I'm concerned that this is happening, still happening every day, and there's probably other women out there right now out in the community that have been released because nobody's been watching what the doctors are doing that are not well enough to be released, but they release them anyway. And they're out there getting abused by somebody because they just can't take care of themselves. And, yeah, and I'm just, yeah, concerned that hopefully we can bring domestic violence or somebody in to be sitting with women when they're in a state or been through something like that or something so violent to make sure that they get the hospital care and all the care that, like, every human deserves. So that's why I'm here speaking today. I wasn't conscious the whole time I was in hospital. The police were really horrible to me. Like, I was too unwell to even argue with them, so I let them take my DNA because I got nothing to hide. And then the shower thing, I was so unwell. It was really hard to get in the shower. It was really hard. Yeah, but they forced me. And just making me sit where they made me sit in the police station for that long and not being able to lay down, because I asked them, I need to lay down on the floor, I wasn't allowed to. And they made me sit there for hours and hours and hours until they could find somewhere to put me where nobody could see me. Because I've got a long history with the government. I was a government child and we were always scum to them, you know, and that's all we get seen as, you know, young children that the home life is just so horrific that we just can't be there. But then we leave and we're out on the street and then we just get, you know, just treated like, you know, just problem children, like, you know what I mean, like, just in the way, we're in the way. Yeah. My earliest interaction with police was when I first got caught because I ran away from home because it was that bad. And then they caught me and they took me back to the Sunbury police station. They handcuffed me to the bench. And because I was so little, my feet couldn't touch the ground. Well, I fell off the bench and I broke my wrist. And then I got put in Winlayton. I was in Winlayton for 11 months until they could find me foster care. So, yeah, but the police's language and the way they speak and their rudeness and just their disgustiness is worse than I've ever even heard from a heavy gangster out in the street. That's how bad they used to be. So that's why technology's in, so they can't do this anymore. Because, but the poor street kids these days, they still get treated like, oh, they're just scum. But they're not. They've just left because it's just, getting abused as a young child and just all different stuff, or getting brought up by parents that are on really heavy drugs or... You know, the abuse is pretty heavy, yeah. The police or the doctors at hospital did not refer me or even report to domestic violence about my situation. No, I was just taken away and hidden in a church and forgotten about. They hid me in a church in Reservoir, and it was run by nuns. It was a double-storey building, but the time that I spent there... The head spins. I couldn't even get out of the chair. And I wasn't getting any medication. I wasn't medicated. I wasn't. Nobody was looking after me. Nobody was seeing me. And I could only stay there for a certain amount of time, and then I had to leave. And yeah, so I had nowhere else to go. So I had to go back to my perpetrator. How I found out I had a brain injury from the incident. I had to take because. I got no help from hospital and was released so quickly without any answers, and all these fits and all, just everything I was going through didn't make sense to me. I was confused. I don't know, having a brain injury, you can't think straight. So I took myself to hospital and I paid $600 every scan to find out what was going on, why this was happening to me, and that's how I found out I had a brain tumour. And when I got the scans done, the private scans, well, it came out from the hard hits that I got a brain tumour in the front of my forehead. So the effects of me having this brain injury and not getting the help from the hospital that I really needed took me away from my children that were in my care. I lost our relationship because I was sick for so many years and I couldn't be there for them, and that's really destroyed my life, their life. I couldn't help myself. I was really unwell. I couldn't go outside. I was in shock for a long time. I was stuck with my ex-partner again because I had nowhere else to go. And, yeah, I couldn't work. I couldn't help myself. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't even make a phone call. That's what it affected me in a lot of ways, a lot of ways. In 2018, a study by Brain Injury Australia found over a 10-year period, over 40% of people in hospital had experienced family violence, had also suffered a brain injury. The same study also found that of the 17 people who had died in hospital due to family violence-related complications, 14 of them had an acquired brain injury. This study also revealed that over these 10 years, 16,296 people were in hospital as a victim. Survivors of family violence, 60% women, 31% were children under 15 years old. I needed the doctors to do their job and... Yeah, like look after me like any other human deserves. But I just didn't get that. I just got released straight away. And I wish that I'd just got some help, like especially, yeah, medically and, yeah, maybe domestic violence to step in and help me, like somewhere to stay, to get well, because I lost my children and I lost my life. I lost a lot of years over this. I lost a lot of years. Would have made it a lot easier if I'd just got the proper diagnosis of what was wrong with me. But I wish I knew what was wrong before I got released, so I had the chance to help myself than do it the hard way and be fitting for so long and being shocked and so confused for so long to be well enough, because it took me like, I don't know, 2 years to get to a private scanner to find out myself, like, what was wrong. Like, but if I'd got the help from the start, then I would have known what I was dealing with and I would have been able to, you know, recover a lot quicker than what this has been. This has been a nightmare. It's been hard. Yeah, really hard. Yeah, well, when women are in domestic violence, they get isolated. They get controlled. They control everything. You know, they don't let you have friends, family, anything. And then when something goes drastically wrong, then you're on your own and you've got no next of kin. And then it's scary to think that other women could be out there getting put in hospital and just released like that because nobody's watching what they're doing. And that's not fair. Like, that's taking somebody's life. That, you know, every life matters. It's serious, yeah, it's a serious conversation that needs to be changed. Yeah. Now I have to fix everything because I couldn't get the medical help. Now I've got to fix it all. Get our relationship back and try and make her understand why I was gone. And, yeah, it's just, and I don't want to tell her, oh, a man bashed me. He nearly killed me. But I told her that I had an accident and I had a brain injury. It took me a long time. That's all she knows right now. So. No, it's just what I've got. But people don't know I've got it unless they ask. I don't tell people. I don't just, you know, walk around and say, oh, I've got a brain injury. I'll write it on my T-shirt. I've got a brain injury. Be careful of the disabled woman here. It's like, no, nobody knows, really. Yeah, no. Yeah. But it's taken me a lot of work and a lot of exercise, a lot of good food and all these different places I work for has helped me a lot because helping people helps me, like, do you know what I mean? Because I don't want them to go through what I went through because there was just no help. So if I can help when we didn't get it, oh, yeah, I'll do as much as I can. I love it. Yeah, so it's helping me recover as well as helping them. It's good. Yeah. Well, I've been really lucky because of the trauma that I have been through and the way I have been treated by the government, the system, the hospitals, the police. I had Fitzroy Legal come into my life, give me the biggest chance. Like, you know, everybody dream of a chance like this. I worked there for 18 months doing their admin. I finished that, but I continue to work with Voices for Change from Fitzroy Legal that I'm doing right now to try and change, like, what's happening to vulnerable women that have nobody. And I also work for a magazine that we write for the street, for the people that are doing it really hard, that are sleeping on concrete, you know, where they can shower, where they can eat, get health care, how we can help them get accommodation, try and help them with their mental problems, their drug problems, try and get them back on track, because it's always other humans that destroy other humans' lives. And that's why these poor people are out there, because somebody's damaged them. And now it's just, we write a magazine to try and repair them. And I also work for The Living Room doing a CAG magazine to try and make things better in any kind of way we can, to make them more comfortable, make sure they've got everything they need. We're running courses, first aid courses. They've got doctors there. They've got nurses there. We're setting up a cinema there. You can eat there. You can shower there. You can do your laundry there. That's a great place. And me being able to speak out today and be able to tell my story and to be able to also be involved with helping people like me, how I was. My life's changed dramatically. I've got my own home now. Thank you to Fitzroy Legal. I've got a beautiful home furnished. I've worked hard for it, but it's all been worth it. So I really enjoy what I'm doing, and I just hope today my words come through really clear of how much this needs to change. Around 1,800 Victorians go to hospital each year as a result of family violence, but numbers on hospital admissions are likely just a tip of the iceberg. In Australian Bureau of Statistics' latest personal safety surveys, it reveals that around 39% of women in Victoria have experienced physical or sexual violence since the age of 15. Sinead Tobin is a social worker at Fitzroy Legal Service. I am interested to hear her thoughts on working with clients who have had an acquired brain injury. I would also like to know her thoughts on how family violence response system could be improved. Sinead, tell us about your experience working with clients who have had an acquired brain injury.
Majority of my experience has been working with women in mental health and drug and alcohol fields, which obviously intersect with family violence and homelessness and many other aspects of life and health complexities. Working with people with ABIs specifically, usually I've found that women don't have the diagnosis at the time, so it's either trying to support people to access that through services, which can be very challenging due to affordability and wait lists. Some women seek out that diagnosis so they can access further supports like NDIS, which need that diagnosis. I find that with women, they may know they had an ABI in the past but don't have the report or paperwork anymore to indicate that, so needing that updated report or re-engaging with services to be able to be provided that diagnosis again in a further assessment, as the brain's always changing as well. But more often than not, I've found people find it very challenging to get those diagnoses and supports in place. While we can refer to services, I think that affordability is a huge one for people, and also being able to navigate the wait time, show up to the appointment, it obviously takes memory and resources that may not be available to people. And also I think a lot of people that I've worked with have experienced some fear of medical assessments and medical professionals, and often avoid these types of assessments and services due to experiencing perhaps judgment or fear of being reported to child protection or police, or the information being shared without their, I guess they will consent, but potentially just not wanting to divulge such personal information to usually a one-off situation as well with a professional. But then where that information goes, and whether often people have challenging accessing it and it being a part of their medical records, which I'm sure can feel quite, well, many things really, but out of their control potentially.
Yeah, wow. So what is your experience working with people who have experienced family violence?
I've worked with many women predominantly to assist in accessing support services. Housing's a huge one. I think leaving a relationship can cause homelessness and housing instability. So putting women in a position of entering the housing world, which is hard to navigate but also very under-resourced, and also ensuring they're safe. I think people with ABIs as well experience high rates of homelessness, and homelessness can then also lead on to criminalisation due to being more surveilled and having to survive on the streets with a lack of resources. I've undertaken some training in the multi-agency risk assessment and management assessment tool that's used in Victoria. And also I've been a part of a research study to attempt to create more collaboration between services such as family violence, mental health, drug and alcohol and housing, which often are very siloed. So trying to access support with one can, perhaps family violence may say that people need to engage with mental health or drug and alcohol first, and it can become a bit of referring on, which people find really challenging. So trying to support people to get the right support that's catered for their needs, but also to really build that trust with people along the way, because often I think when women reach out for family violence support, it is obviously very challenging, but trying to speak quite openly about something that's usually kept quite private for a lot of reasons, mostly fear.
In your experience, what are some of the gaps in the family violence system for people with an ABI? I was thinking when you get a brain injury, and they just release you like that, and you don't know, they don't tell you what's wrong with you. That's very confused. That's really you're just so confused. And when you get a brain tumor instantly, your brain's all, I don't know, it's all dizzy. It doesn't work normal. So you're all confused all over the place. It's really hard to do anything for yourself and make a decision, stick and try and make a plan. You can't do it because your brain's doing it, and it makes you go into fits. So they release them girls like that on the street, and they put them out in the street. They're confused. They can't help themselves. They can't make proper decisions or make one or plan anything. It's not good. Yeah, it's really cruel. Yeah, because I've been through it. I want them to really know how it is and what they're going through.
I think a lot of women in general, but specifically with ABIs, may not even attend the hospital. And then when they do, they aren't comprehensively assessed for brain injuries. While screeners can identify some indicators, which the MARAM attempts to do, I think the follow-on can often fall down for people. I think the intention is to assess risk and safety and have a briefer response, whereas that wraparound support needed to refer for the ABI, the diagnosis itself, I feel like that's where it's lacking. I feel like national support systems such as Centrelink and NDIS are really challenging to navigate, and they're really onerous. Even as professionals, it's hard to figure out what's going on at times, and they require a lot of evidence to gain support. And people that historically haven't been in contact with support services for a number of reasons find it hard to get that evidence and then therefore get that support that they require. I think that due to some symptoms of ABI as well, there can be discrimination in services that's found. Workers aren't across how best to manage people with complexities and assist their needs. I think while I've worked with people that are identified as needing the disability support pension by Centrelink themselves, there's no support within the system to help people to navigate that. Also with NDIS and DSP applications, I think while you can get a report, sometimes I don't target all the services needed, so evidence looks different for NDIS and DSP. If there's a medico-legal assessment needed, that may target different things, and then the report or assessment can't be used across services too, which would be quite beneficial for people. But it comes back to, I think, services being siloed. And maybe a more national response needed to definitely family violence, which I think is a known issue, but ABI's experience with family violence, which needs a lot more research and support around, as historically ABIs were researched off males predominantly. So I think there's a lot more work to in the space for research around women experiencing ABIs due to family violence.
What changes need to be made for better outcomes for people?
I think I've touched on some, but I think a more comprehensive, collaborative response across services where people who experience family violence come in contact to, and people that experience ABIs, more comprehensive assessments that really target ABIs and brain damage after family violence, but also that follow through of a streamlined referral process dedicated to exploring people's brain injury after family violence, but also supporting them to go through that process after trying to live with the trauma they've just experienced and what that brings, and maybe additional health complexities and mental health diagnoses that are occurring that muddy the waters of diagnoses in general. I think people can often assume with women that it's a psychological, so can overlook ABIs. I think the resourcing of organisations are typically just first contact and potentially some check-ins after that, where I, working with women, if you want to build real rapport and trust, it takes time, and I think you learn more about women as the longer you get to know them and the trust is built and they are able to divulge more along the way. So if there's resourcing for more wraparound, longer-term support for women to ensure that all their psychosocial needs are met that occur after family violence, like housing, mental health, whether there's children involved, and navigating systems that will take quite some time, like NDIS and DSP, so really following people along their journey for as long as possible.
There's no use starting to support somebody and be there for them 100% to start the recovery process when you just only run it for 6 weeks and then just leave them on their own with it. It needs to be supported. These women need to be supported through this all the way to the road, all the way to the road ends, until it ends and it's like they're recovered enough to be able to make a life and be able to have confidence and be able to get out there again and be able to learn to, you know, communicate with people after so long of isolation and hurt. Yeah, thanks for joining me, Shanae, and I hope this works and I hope we can change it so nobody else has to suffer and get the proper help they need. The Victorian government should follow a recommendation from Brain Injury Australia to trial an integrated brain injury and family violence service. This service would be better met in the needs of family violence victims, survivors who have had an acquired brain injury or who are at risk of one. Supports in the service should include a formal system for recording and following through with brain injury concerns, including a risk assessment framework with red flags for brain injury, pre-screening for ABIs through questions regarding a person's potential to have experienced a brain injury, a screening assessment that involves a brief assessment of short-term memory as used in many hospital emergency departments. If you need support for family violence, reach out to Safe Steps. Safe Steps is Victoria's 24/7 Family Violence Response Centre for confidential crisis support, information and accommodation. Call Safe Steps on 1800 015 188. That's 1800 015 188. The Orange Door provides family violence help and support. Visit orangedoor.vic.gov.au for more information. It's orangedoor.vic.gov.au. 1-800-RESPECT is a national domestic family sexual violence counselling, information and support service. Call them on 1-800-737-732. That's 1-800-737-732.